When you want an opportunity to hear from people all over the sports world, there's only one voice to trust to bring those stories to you. Here now with a special guest is Dan Tortora.
Here right now with a very special guest on a wake-up call with Dan Tortora on wakeupcalldt.com. We have Lazara Sims joining the show once again. Syracuse alum, also coach for Syracuse, and is currently with the Binghamton Bearcats NCAA Division I men's basketball program. Lazarus, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How's things going, Dan?
Things are going good. Happy to have you back here on the show, and definitely appreciate you taking some time out. I wanted to start with you first and foremost on a little bit of history here. You went on a run with Syracuse into the national championship game, and so you know what it feels like and how difficult it is. So once we get into this tournament time and, you know, going through the bracket, when you see Syracuse get to the Sweet 16, were you surprised that this team did it?
No, I'm not surprised. They've been to the Sweet 16, I think, for the last several years. It's been, you know, that's been the limit to where we've been, the Sweet 16. I know four years I was there, we played in the Sweet 16 game. This track record speaks for itself. He gets there. He gets the wins. He has a very successful record in the NCAA tournament.
And when you look at, you know, the Sweet 16 and getting here and talking about, you know, in recent history that this is an area that Syracuse can attain, if the Sweet 16 is as far as you go, I mean, there's 349 teams in Division I men's basketball. You get to the Final 16. When you're a coach and, you know, you've had your time at Syracuse and they're now coaching Binghamton, 16, you know, is that enough if you're doing that season in and season out? Or do you think that begins to be a place where a team gets a little bit upset that that's as far as they've gone?
It's enough and then it's not enough. As a competitor, as a coach, as someone who in a sport of who won, that's all you remember, not who comes in second or in this case Sweet 16. It's not enough. You play the game to get the ring. You play the game for the championship trophy. So teams that's never been in the tournament are just happy to be there, but then they're not satisfied. They'll say that, but ultimately everybody wants to get to that championship game and win that championship. So the public eye, you say it's enough. We had a good season. I'm proud of them, and you are proud of your guys, but you want to get to the championship.
And looking at this team and looking at some irony in your time with Syracuse and what's going on with the team now, they're making a run to try and attain a place in the championship game. You had a place in the championship game, and going back to that 95-96 season, you went up against Montana State in the first game of the NCAA tournament for Syracuse. Syracuse this season goes up against Montana. When you saw that Syracuse had gotten Montana, obviously they're not the same school, but coming from the same state, did you have a smirk or step back and say, you know, wow, that's kind of strange that back in your time, almost, you know, you're looking back to 1996 from 2013 to say that, you know, they're starting out the same way that you did in a way?
Not more so, as more I was looking at the seeding and where they were seated. Usually the region kind of gives us a kind of a foresight of, you know, the success they're going to have. All the times that we went to the Final Four, we've done good in the tournament. We've been out west. So for them to start out in L.A. was a good omen for me.
You look back at starting out west. When you see the bracket seeding and you see that, you know, there's your Midwest, your West, your South, and your East, you know, regionals and your brackets, when you look at the fact that they really don't have any geographical barrier, you know, in the East bracket you had teams playing in Texas, teams playing in California, you know, nobody playing on the East Coast. When you see that, like you said, it was a good omen for you as far as Syracuse goes, but is there any sense to be made of that when you look at these brackets as a player and as a coach and see that even if you're in the East bracket, you're not necessarily playing anywhere close to the East Coast for part of your games that you're going to start out with?
Yeah, that's the funny part about it. They say it's the East, but you're not in the East. You're not in New York, or you're not in, you know, Albany or something like that, or up this side of the coast. So it's I guess they just call it East because it's four brackets and four corners: north, south, east, west. So I guess that's how they label it. But I think it's more you scramble that day when you get selected. You scramble to find out who played this opponent. What can I get on them? What can we do? So it's your head is spinning before you get to that game. And until the day before that game, you're in such a disarray or in a rush to get everything right and to get everything you can. It's like cramming for a test that you got 1 day to study for.
And when you look back on what Syracuse had to do this season and going to their bracket with California, basically playing themselves in a home game, you know, when you look at the seeding of California at 12 and Syracuse at 4, even though you said, you know, it was a good omen to have Syracuse on the West Coast, do you ever look at this as, you know, a conflict of what's fair, that the higher seed is essentially playing a road game in cases like this?
No, because once it gets to the NCAA tournament, man, it's who's clicking, who can run their schemes, who can get the other team out of their scheme, right time. Everybody says luck. I don't see the luck as far as the discipline. The discipline of the past 4 months where you've been training and preseason and practicing every day and grinding and getting your skills prepared for the NCAA tournament.
Being out on the West Coast, I mean, you being a player that's, you know, had to learn and had to understand this game, and you're used to playing up and down the East Coast, maybe going a little bit to the Midwest area, but going out on the West Coast, what does it do to a player's body? Does it change you at all? Does it affect you at all? I mean, Syracuse got 2 wins this season out there, but, you know, as a player, do you feel that you're jumping over time zones and your body's saying it's 10 o'clock, but it's actually 7?
Yeah, you feel it. You know what I mean? Your body travels and your body has its own mechanism. The air is different everywhere you go, and, you know, different states and different altitudes. So you feel it. But the one thing about Syracuse, the orange travels well. One of the best oranges you can eat is out California oranges. So I guess that's part of it. We can go out that way, and orange does well because it's one of the orange states.
And going back to D.C. now and having Syracuse return to a place where you're back in the Verizon Center going up against Indiana, but it's back in that place where Syracuse had one of the worst losses ever, only scoring 39 points in 40 minutes, not even a point a minute for them. To go back to that place,
yes.
This has been a team, Lazarus, that has been about avenging their mistakes throughout the season, to go into the Big East tournament, avenge Pittsburgh, avenge Georgetown. Going into the Verizon Center, do you think that this team right now is better than what they showed when they were there last time?
They did. And then, you know, to that, they're not playing Georgetown, which is a good thing, I guess, with them being in the Verizon Center. But you can't avenge any loss. They lost it there. You can just learn from it and try not to repeat the mistakes that you had. So they can't avenge anything of a Verizon Center. They can just, you know what I mean, get focused. They can't avenge the loss to Indiana in 86. So they just, or 89, whatever year that was, I forget. I'm dating myself. But it's ironic that they're playing Indiana, you know what I mean, for this game with Howard Trish playing against them in the championship, now Brandon Trish playing for the Sweet 16. It's pretty much full circle where, you know, Brandon can do some things and get that off their back.
A guy that you obviously saw, I mean, not being there this season with the team, but you helped to grow this player before then, and talking about Brandon Trish, you spent a lot of time with him, and you being a guard and understanding what you need to do on Syracuse to teach Brandon, what have you seen from him? I mean, when you look at Brandon Trish, how do you describe him as a player, having known him and having worked with him?
As a player, he's a complete package. Whether he shows it every night, it depends on Brandon's mood and Brandon's psyche. Brandon's a very mental player, so it depends on his mood. Like, Brandon knows it's his senior year, so he's been very focused this year. He knows that every game that he plays is his last game. not going to be our. We got Georgetown, and we got Georgetown in another couple weeks. He knows that. You know, we got to take every opportunity, being that he wants to be a pro, to establish himself, to make a good name for himself, and show his ability. So he's been playing well. I'm very proud of him. I think he's matured over every year, and he's coming along in a nice way and in a good manner.
Does this team go where Trish goes? Because it seems like, at least for me in covering the team, that when he struggles, when he's turning the ball over, when his shot's not on, when he's not attacking the basket as much, you can see him in the locker room after the game, and you talk about Brandon being a mental player, and I can't agree more. In the moments where Syracuse has struggled, to go into that locker room and see the total change in the aura around him, his head looking toward the ground. I mean, this is a guy who takes everything on his shoulders. Does this team go where Brandon goes in your mind?
Most definitely. Most definitely. Michael does a great job, but I think Brandon getting over 15 points carries him farther than Michael getting 10, 12 assists. I think just the effect that he has on the game, he's a mismatch problem. He can, like I said, he can get to the free throw line at any time. As long as he's aggressive, he can make shots. He's one of the best shooters in the country. His speed, his power is probably one of the best for a two guard or a point guard in college basketball right now.
Looking at Brandon and looking at this being his final season, free throws have become extremely important, not just with him, but with this team, and a team that was given more opportunities than would be normal, I would say, for an average game. 41 free throw attempts against California, and the majority of the second half, that's where Syracuse's points came from, despite the fact that they missed many of those free throw attempts that they took. How important are free throws? You know, I know Boeheim will get asked a question in press conferences, won't say too much about it, but, you know, as a player and as a coach, how vital are free throws and practicing free throws? And, you know, what do they mean to you? Because it seems like, you know, these are obviously things that are going to come back and bite you if you can't make them.
Yeah, well, Coach Boeheim practices free throws every day. We do drills with free throws. He spends time on free throws. So it's not like they're working on this. Is free throw is mental, and it's a focus, and they just have to sit down and focus when they get to the free throw line. It is important to the game in different ways. It's not as much as important as everybody makes the big deal about it. It's more important that if we can get Brandon to the line, that means Brandon's putting pressure on the two guard. He's getting foul trouble for their team, and now he's not going up against the first player. He's going up against the second tier player. It means that they got to adjust their strategies. So making the free throws, yes, we do need him, but it's more important that he's attacking, that he's putting their best players in problem situations and now it's a chess game and they have to adjust.
First game and second game, Syracuse shows against Montana that they can come out firing. Look like that, you know, there was some anger from how they left the Big East tournament to go out there and just put it on Montana, never take their foot off the gear and just keep driving through. And then with California, it's a game that goes back and forth with not a lot of offense in the second half. What type of team is Syracuse, in your mind, moving forward when you see such different nights coming out of them?
Two different teams. You got an emotional team. That playoff emotion. Michael's an emotional guy. Brandon's an emotional guy. James is as well. Rock is as well. So I think depending on the emotions, I know that they all want to win. They all play hard. They play to win. The angry team, the angry Syracusans, with a point to prove, is a dangerous team. They can come out and beat anyone in the country, and not be close. So I'd rather be that angry Syracuse team where guys are writing them off and they going out to prove a point, or guys are saying Brandon can't do this and Brandon's going out to prove a point.
And how does this team, you know, at this point against Indiana, get angry? I mean, Indiana has had their struggles this season. They've been number one, yet they've fallen and they've had their issues. They had a test against Temple. Syracuse is a team that also had a test against Temple and lost to them. When you look at this matchup, how does Syracuse get the advantage on Indiana?
You're getting those, you know, like I said, you get the commentators and the media saying this player is better than this player. Indiana's program is top of the game right now. I guess they were in between number one and number four all year, and Syracuse has been struggling, and if we're not shooting, we're not a good team. So there's enough fuel, and there's enough wrong critiques about Syracuse's game that can keep these guys going and keeping a chip on their shoulder, because we can do more things than just shoot the ball. And if we're shooting bad, we can still win games, and that has happened. Brandon has most and not all the time has been the best player on the floor. You know what I mean? But he's so quiet and so reserved that, you know, he's not demonstrative, where he's not a focal point.
When Brandon is quiet, and I agree with you on that, you know, where's the leadership come from? Does it still come from a guy like him in your mind, or, you know, is it coming from a James Sutherland or a Michael Carter Williams? When you look at this team, where do you really believe the leadership lies?
Michael's a verbal and emotional leader. Brandon's more watch me. So when Brandon's rolling, if you watch and look at Brandon, when Brandon's rolling, it's a sight to see.
And looking at this site and what Syracuse has right here, right now, in your mind, truly knowing these players and being able to spend time with these players and now watching them this season as of late, do you believe that this is a team that can come out there and defeat Indiana? If it's, let's say it's a close game, it's going back and forth, do you think Syracuse has enough to pull this one out against Indiana?
I think we have enough. Like I said, we got Christmas and Musakaya, and Bai has been great off the bench. Probably start for any other program. He's been a factor where guys saying he doesn't have the hands, he's not catching the ball, and this year he's been finishing around the basket. He was a big key in their last win. Rock can come in games and be explosive. Daywan might have his moment, which he, you know, I mean, it's almost due for him to, you know, show and prove for his freshman year. You know, it's things there where a couple of things Indiana can't count for, and that's heart and determination, and that's what I said with Bai and with Rock, and what they want to prove themselves, and you already have Brandon and James, and Michael's been a terror all season. He's been handling his business the whole time, and he's been running the team, and I think he'll do that for the course of the tournament. So, to me, I feel, and it could be biased, but I feel Syracuse is a better team.
As
top to bottom.
Playing as a guard in this game and playing for Syracuse, when you look at the inside, how important is a guy like Baikita to not only catch the ball inside from a guard, from you playing that position, to be able to go inside and trust him at the basket, but not only that, in the fact that you have essentially a center on Syracuse now that can make free throws?
Right. Look, it frees up the guard's mental. You know what I mean? And as a point guard myself, if I throw it into you once and you drop it, I might throw it into you a second time. If you drop it the second time, I'm not going back into you. So it frees up my mind to make plays and to be able, and now it opens up the court for me. Now I got more options than just me passing the ball around the wing. Now I can look inside. Now I can make the defense respect inside. So having a good center and having a dominant center, or even a center that just catches the ball, even if it's catching it and making a move and then throwing the ball back out, but having, making the defense react into the inside, it creates big opportunities for point guard, and that's what's doing it for Michael. Michael's able to come off pick and rolls and hit Bai or hit Rock for lobs and dunks, and they're catching and finishing, they're getting fouls. So it's alleviating a lot of pressure for Michael that he just has to find James and Brandon.
And looking, you know, inside as well with one of the guys that you had mentioned, Rakeem Christmas, this is a guy who Boeheim has admitted before, you know, sometimes you only see half effort and you may not see everything that Rock has to offer until he's out of college. You know, he had made that statement toward the end of the season that, you know, he doesn't know if we'll ever see everything that Rock has to offer. When he goes out there and he looks like he truly wants it, this team is a totally different team inside. If Rakeem Christmas doesn't do what is needed, if he only goes halfway, can this team beat a team like Indiana who has three guys that are getting at least six boards a game? I mean, does this have to be a Rakeem Christmas 110% effort type of game?
I think it does, but I do think that, like I said, with Musakaya and with Daywan, we have some stability behind him where we don't have to focus on him getting those numbers. They don't have the depth that we have in the post. So I really haven't seen anybody in his position to be as skilled and explosive and have the power and the quickness that he has that he doesn't show.
What is it about Rock that you think in working with him has ever held him back with having so much talent?
He's a good kid. He's an outgoing kid, but he's also a reserve kid. So I think the reserve side of him is what's holding him back on the court. In fact, he goes hard in spurts. And people watch his demeanor, because I've told him before. I said, people watching you, people that see you from the outside, look like you don't care. And I know you care, because he'll come in practice day in, day out, and man, I'm screaming and yelling at him, and he's still showing up. He's still putting effort in. So he knows, dude, for someone to care, to have to deal with coach screaming at him, coach yelling at him, coach fussing with him, and then still practice hard and still do what he needs to do in practice, the kid cares. It's just, you know, the way he carries his demeanor.
Going back on your history, take a break from this team for a while. With the run that you made, you know, a run that was not expected out of Syracuse, you know, going through Montana State, Drexel, Georgia, Kansas, Mississippi State, and eventually getting to that championship game against Kentucky where your team lost. When you see that road that you had to take, when you're in the NCAA tournament and you're going through each of these rounds and having to play six different games, how difficult was it for you to lead this team, or as the games went on, did it get easier? I mean, bring me into what it was like to be on the court, because the majority of people watching the NCAA tournament are never going to experience what it's like to get through as many rounds as your team did.
Well, if you played basketball growing up and you played in neighborhoods like I did in John, it was a day in the park, because you go to the parks on Sunday, Saturday morning, and you're playing all day long. So that's equivalent to your six games or whatever many games you got to play for the NCAA tournament. If you're a hooper, you want to play. Most hoopers don't want to practice. They just want to play. That's why I used to get on AI about him in the press conference about practice. I mean, he performed in the game, because most kids want to play ball. They don't want the instruction. Oh, you need to do this. This is how you get to the game. And they know it, but they just want to play. I mean, I dealt with my first year with Johnny Flynn. Johnny just wanted to play. Man, skip this practice. Let me just get to the game. And that's what kids think. So once the NCAA tournament goes on, they're like, shoot, we're just playing now. You know what I mean? So the mindset is, I'm back to my roots. We just playing park ball now. And we had a good time. And for us, with our ride, we was playing Montana State, and then the next game was supposed to have been Memphis. So we're playing our game. We're coming up the tunnel, and Memphis is about to play Drexel with Malik Rose. And they're looking at us like, oh, we'll see y'all next week. I guess maybe Malik heard it. Malik canceled that story. But they were just so hyped about playing us that they slept on Drexel. That just happened. That's just part of the tournament.
When you look at this tournament and you look at how it's been going, I mean, this season for the tournament, like you said, you know, a team sleeping on another team, Drexel being able to get forward over Memphis. When you look at the way the tournament is going with 13 seeds, 12, I mean, the 12-5 matchup seems to be well in favor of the 12 at this point. You almost don't want to be the higher seed in that case. 13 seeds advancing, 14 seeds advancing, now the first ever 15 seed in Florida Gulf Coast to advance to get to the Sweet 16. The way that things were going, when you were playing, did this ever matter, or did you ever think it was possible that things would be going in favor of the Drexel in your time of the world, which has now turned into the Florida Gulf Coast?
Well, we thought we was the better team. And I know Coach Norris, that's like assistant coach at Gulf Coast. And I've talked with him before the game and after the game, and these guys play like he played when he was at Miami. You can see it. You can see imprints of guys that are being coached by certain people. The point guard at Miami, I know Coach Huger at Miami, assistant coach. When I watched him beat Duke, I talked with him. I said, man, I can see you. You know what I mean? That's from seeing, playing with them and knowing them and knowing their personality. These guys at Gulf Coast, it's kind of like us. We felt we were better. Whether what you guys say doesn't matter. You know what I mean? They put their shoes on like us. They put their shorts on. They walk out of the same tunnel. Let's see what you got.
When you go and you look at that game of Florida Gulf Coast, especially you having a connection to that coaching staff, when you see their victory in the first game that they play, to not only come as a number 15 seed, but to come over Georgetown, honestly, as a Syracuse alum, was there a special kind of smirk or a good feeling after you see Georgetown leave once again? I mean, Georgetown's now lost in the 21st century to 13, 14, and 15 seeds.
To be honest, no, not really. The better the Big East does, the more it shows how the Big East is and should be. So for Georgetown, or, you know, I mean, I'm always picking for a Final Four to be Big East. You know, so to watch Georgetown go down now, I mean, I was a fan of John Thompson. I'm a Georgetown fan just because of the Big East. So any Big East team I want to be successful just because of they're in the league with Syracuse. And with Florida Gulf Coast, after that first game, I text Coach Norris, and his reply back to me was, thanks, I'm working, I'll hit you back. He was already on to the next one. Like, this is what guys do. That's, you know, I mean, is one win is not enough. Florida Gulf Coast, not just happy to be there.
And with one win not being enough, and we talked earlier about the Sweet 16 not being enough, Syracuse, you know, and talking about the Big East, this is their last run here as a Big East team, and they just so happen to, ironically, be in a Big East home of Georgetown as a Big East team, with the potential of going up against another Big East team in Marquette, who is going to be playing Miami in the other game in the East Regional. This team of Marquette with Buzz Williams, what can you say about this team? Because in all honesty, I, as you said, you have respect for John Thompson and everything that he did for the Georgetown Hoyas, and obviously his son is doing now, John Thompson III. I have a lot of respect for Buzz Williams, who has come into the juggernauts of the Big East and knocked them all down at some point. So go into this Marquette team and their potential as well.
Well, his team has his chip on his shoulder. He figures, I mean, he's underappreciated as a coach, and everybody's talking about John and Jim and Calhoun. And so he comes in, why not me? Yeah, I'm going to show you why not me. So he prepares his team with a chip on their shoulder, and they come out and they play aggressive. They play hard defense. They play hard offense. They it's kind of almost like Arkansas and 95, 96, or 40 minutes of hell. They come at you. They push you. They pull you. They attack you. They run over you. They run through you. They run around you. He tells them, Miami, get it done. And get it done in the sport of basketball. So it's not that they're a dirty team. They work hard, and he gets the best out of them.
When you're a Big East team, I think you can agree with me on this, you never want to see another Big East team in the NCAA tournament. If Syracuse...
Right. One of us got to go.
And if Syracuse does see Marquette, this is a team that a couple seasons ago, with you there as an assistant, you know, that loss came against Buzz Williams in the second game that Syracuse played.
They owe us. The ref, the half-court call with Scoop was not the right call, so they owe us.
And if you go up against, you know, if you see Syracuse go up against Marquette again, where's your confidence in Syracuse being able to overcome Marquette? I mean, this is a team that they lost to in the regular season. Of course, they were a different team at the time. The mentality of the team was down. Now it looks like it's switched courses after that Georgetown win in the Big East tournament. What can this Syracuse team do if they face Marquette again, with this being a Big East rivalry that's really gone even between Jim Boeheim and Buzz Williams?
I got confidence in Marquise. I got confidence in Coach Boeheim's game plan, his schemes, and just his track record speaks for itself. He's a winner. He'll have them prepared. So, and it's March Madness, so everybody's geared up. Everybody's antennas are up. St. Marquise boys, their antennas, all of them from 1 through 15 on the roster, their antennas are up and they're ready. So whoever name is called, I think they'll answer the call.
Before I let you go, Lazarus, you know, looking at your team with Binghamton, you know, obviously a team that has struggled the last few seasons here under a new head coach this season, and you being an assistant on the team for the first time this season for Binghamton, what do you take from a year like this? I mean, you're watching Syracuse and the rest of the country, a lot of teams in the NCAA tournament, and Binghamton really just struggled throughout the entire year. What can you do from here with the Binghamton team, and what have you seen from the team at this point?
Well, you get back hungry. You get back hungry when you're so used to winning that you don't know what the other side of the table looks like. So, you know, that table is nice and glossy on the other side, but when you look under the bottom of that table and the sand's still there and it's not as polished, and then it's time for you to polish it. So you get back hungry and you get to work. So, and that's what our coaching staff has done. I think we got a good recruiting class coming in next year, and we're going to develop our guys that we have here that's returning, and we're going to get back to work and grind and try to, you know, make a better product and push to get to the tournament.
What do you think, you know, when you're on a team that, obviously, when you're playing for Syracuse, you had to overcome adversity. When the NBA isn't working out and you're going to another league, you're overcoming adversity. Being a coach with Syracuse, the team had to overcome adversity with you there on the staff. So now in this place where you are with Binghamton, all the adversity that you've had, does this help you help these kids overcome their own adversity?
I think so, but I think in everyday life we overcome adversity. Every time you take a walk down the street, you overcome something. I mean, we're blessed to be able to do what we can do. There's so many unfortunate people with illnesses and diseases and you know, body functions and parts that's lost, and our soldiers over in the war are losing limbs and coming home and can't function the way they used to. I wake up every day and I'm blessed. You know, I got a good family, a loving wife, and so adversity is not as much as it is as people make it out to be, because like I said, I'm blessed. The Lord lets me wake up every day, so I just enjoy and feel blessed that I can come in every day and work and do something that I love to do and have a smile on my face.
And I remember the last time that I talked, one of the last couple times that I had spoken with you, that your daughter likes to go out and play the game of basketball, and she likes to take you out onto the court. How's that matchup going on? Are you winning any of those games, or is she taking them?
I'm still a player, so I don't let them beat me, whatever age they are. I'm still, to this day, you're not winning. I'm not letting you win. I'm not going to let you feel good about, oh, I beat you. I just can't do it. So she won't win a game, so I can't walk.
And you know, when that win comes, let's say whenever it happens, you know, however many years down the road, months, whatever it may be, what's it going to be like for you? Because, you know, the statement has come before that, you know, whether it's a card game or a basketball game or whatever it may be, that once the kid defeats the parent, that they think, all right, I got you now. And so, you know, what's that going to be like as a parent? Because, I mean, you've experienced so many things on the court, but you have yet to experience one of your children getting a victory over you.
Yeah, well, what makes a parent is the same thing as what makes a good athlete and a great coach. You know when not to. So when I feel that I think that day comes and she's going to beat me, we're not going to play. I'm going to gracefully retire with some type of excuse, but we're not going to play that game if I know I'm going to lose. It's just not going to come about.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, and I know the day that you call me and tell me that you're retiring, that means that you know, you have some good genes coming up behind you. So I appreciate you coming on to the show as always, Lazarus, and cannot thank you enough for, you know, giving your input on Syracuse and also giving your input on Binghamton and a program that I know you're really trying to get better and to heal the wounds. So, you know, obviously I hope for good work for you for the future and look forward to keeping in touch.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me. But I'm always going to be orange and blue. I just got a little green running in me right now.